Firstly, just a brief reminder, as you heard at the beginning of the announcements with all the statements, this week we have the clergy conference, which is a wonderful time for the priests to get together, spend time with the bishop, talk some business about things ongoing in the diocese, but also just to be together to offer Mass together. So there won't be 8 o'clock Mass on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. 6:30 will be here all week, but we'll still have 8 o'clock on Monday and Friday. We'll still have confessions on Thursday evening. But pray for the priest, pray for me and Father Borkenhagen, the bishop, all the priests as we gather. Secondly, the stewardship packets are in the back of the church, so please deviate from our ordinary routines if you go out the sides and go to the back and get the packets this week and next week as we begin our stewardship time of renewal. A week ago was what was so affectionately called, as many of you know, the Holy Wars. And as a priest, I had the privilege of standing on the sidelines as Capon faced their arch nemesis and rival, the school that cannot be named here on this side of town. And it's a custom of us priests to stand on the sidelines of the parishes where we send our schools, where we send the kids from our parishes, not where the parishes that we come from. Father Matt, of course, recently moved over to St. Joe, but a proud Capon alum, understood what that tension was like, but he proudly championed the fact that he has one student that goes to Capon. So the second half, he decided that he would support that one student on that one winning sideline. But it was a wonderful fall evening. It was cool, still wind, a beautiful evening for football. And as it became very clear in the second half, particularly during the fourth quarter, that Capon was going to win, it was beautiful. Of course, the kids started to jump and shout right as the game ended. The ref blew that whistle, that long awaited for 24 years worth of waiting moment. All the players began to jump and scream and yell. The coaches had to corral them over to the sideline. They were on the third baseline next to the fans. And they went away from the fans to high-five the students from this other school who cannot be named. And they reached the end of that line. And the first one started a trend, accidentally, of course, but the eagerness of hearts could only follow suit. And the second that he finished that last player and coach, he turned and ran faster than I had seen any player run during the duration of that entire football game. And he ran to the other side, ran back to the student section, separated just merely by a thin boundary and a net. He took off his helmet and thrust it high into the air and screamed at the top of his lungs, which of course the students were glad to respond. And I don't know how it happened, but every single player following suit ran and joined that crowd, man after man. And I tell you, the volume didn't add simply one voice at a time. It seemed to multiply miraculously at every single moment. But that great joy, that great celebration, every single moment of suffering and difficulty over the last 24 years contributed to that joy. It wasn't just some free feast, some free joy. No. All of the fumbled opportunities to win on a last drive, all of the interceptions, all of the games lost in the last seconds right near the goal line, all of the time at practice, all of the blood, sweat, and tears, that is related to the joy of that victory. Come to the feast. Come to the feast. Everything is ready. My brothers and sisters, today is the question of this joy. What does it mean? What does it look like? What is it composed of? How do we experience it? How do we encounter it? And we have to remember, though, that this joy, likewise, is not without cost. It's a feast of rich, juicy foods and choice, pure wines. You don't pick those up at the dollar store. You have to search far and wide for these things. And in fact, in this case, the Father has sent his Son to the heights of heaven to bring the most choice wine, the purest wine. The calves and the cattle that are fat and did not happen in an instant. No, in the scorn of sin and death, the Father at that moment said, I am preparing a pasture to fatten my cattle for the feast that is provided in my Son. The feast of rich, juicy food and pure choice wines, I am preparing it. The instant of dispelling from the garden, that is the Father's mind. The moment that King David is chosen, the little shepherd boy made king, the Father is saying, yes, my feast is nearer. When the Blessed Mother, the beautiful virgin, says, yes, thy will be done, and he is conceived in her womb through her motherhood, through her femininity, beautifully shining forth something marvelous into the world, the Father is saying, yes, my feast is near, and my cattle are getting fat. He spends his 30 years in hiding those hidden years and then goes forth into the world calling people to himself to participate in his mission. Yes, the cattle are getting fat. And finally, he picks up his cross, only going to suffer the night before, and he picks up his cross and carries it with blood, sweat, and tears to redeem the world. Blood, sweat, and tears that aren't unrelated to the joy of the resurrection, the joy of this feast. And my brothers and sisters, this feast is provided on this mountain. On this mountain. And is that to disintegrate all of the joys in our life? Oh no, quite the contrary. The joy that is substantially tasted here together on this mountain is intended to thread together every single joy throughout the course of our entire life. And yes, there is a substantial degree in difference, but that doesn't mean that these joys are unrelated from one another. Because we experience these joys as a sign of the providence of the Father. The providence of the Father who cares for you, who loves you, who cherishes you, who has chosen you as his adopted children. He has chosen you, and he has prepared the feast. Come to the feast. I have fattened my cattle, and I have poured it out in the heart of my son, pierced open for you. Come to the feast. And the magnitude of this joy, that's the question of this parable. It's not some whimsical king or tyrant who's having a bad day or a fit of anger. No, it's the question of a joy that's imposed upon the world that the world can't comprehend. That's the first tragedy. The first tragedy was that the king invites on the most solemn occasion that could be conceived of, is preparing a feast. The one who has access to the most wealth, the most elegance, and he goes to random people, his friends, and says, come to the feast, and they say, I would rather work in my vineyard or work in my farm or go back to my business. Why is my heart so insensitive to the joy that you are providing before me? That's the question. That's the tragedy. And it's not a matter of worthiness. We already know that we can't be worthy of some invitation to this celebration. It's merely the generosity of the Father. We know that both the bad and the good are likewise invited. That's stated. We know that the people who refused the invitation were not worthy to come, but they were still invited. What an ironic moment of worthiness or unworthiness when this response is either elicited or numbed to this magnitude of joy that's unfolding before us. And so it ought to give rise to us about this question of the wedding garment, because clearly this response is related to this joy. What does this joy compel within me? What does this joy ferment within me? What does this joy heal within me? What does this joy set free within me in my life, on the mountain of my life, which is the only one that I have? What does this joy do? It ought to open ourselves radically to conversion. That every single instance, our life hangs upon the Father and his care for us, to be a child of his. That's what it means to have a wedding garment. Not just to rely on ourselves, to make ourselves worthy of an invitation, or to prove our worthiness to continue in the feast. That's not what this wedding garment is. But why else might it be appropriate to have a wedding garment? Because we have to ask ourselves, who is the bridegroom marrying? We know it's the church. We know it's the church. And my brothers and sisters, we are made a part of the church by virtue of our baptism. So who would dare show up to this marvelous feast, their own wedding, with the Word made flesh, not prepared to receive this joy with everything that we are and have? That is the tragedy. So let us present our hearts, not trying to make ourselves worthy from the ground up, not building a tower of Babel to this altar from on high, but to receive it in the heart of the Son, the temple where we worship in spirit and truth, to receive it, to participate in it in love and joy and generosity and gratitude, that our life becomes completely revolved around this joy that magnifies and intensifies, not one by one, but exponentially and infinitely. Let us come together here on this mountain where this feast is lavished upon us. Rejoice together well, pray together well, sing together well, and beg that the Lord endow our lives with the beauty of his grace to purge out anything in our hearts on our wedding garments that ought not be there, that we may shine permeated with the light of his glory forever and ever.